Welcome to Chevrons, a podcast for the enlisted force. If you're new here, welcome. I am Senior Airman Julia Ahasey, and I'm a public affairs specialist in the Massachusetts National Guard. This podcast offers advice and guidance for personal and professional development for all military members from all branches who are looking to become the best version of themselves. In this episode, we will be talking to Command Sergeant Major James Perrault, the Command Sergeant Major for the 151st Regional Support Group. He shares his advice and lessons learned from his 31 years of service. Without further ado, let's get into the episode. Command Sergeant Major Perrault, thank you so much for joining us today.
Awesome, thanks. Happy to be here.
So to get started, can you tell us a little bit about your military journey and what inspired you to join and where you are today?
Sure, yeah. Once again, let me just thank you for inviting me to the podcast. Super excited to be here. So my journey, 31 years ago, right around June, graduated from high school. I decided college wasn't really for me, so I decided to join the Guard. My father was in the military for 25 years, so, you know, kind of wanted to follow his footsteps, seemed like the right thing to do. So, you know, looking back through my career, I started as a fuel supply specialist, and it may sound kind of strange, but the reason why I chose that is because it had the biggest bonus, to be totally transparent. So that's what I chose. It really wasn't something that I found interesting, but the money sounded good. So when I was 17, I think it was 12 grand, sounded like a lot of money. So that's where we started with the career. Right. Quickly transitioned to a motor transport operator. We call that an 88 Mike in the Army Guard. That brought me through multiple levels of leadership, moved up pretty quickly up to a sergeant. And I've been basically in motor transport for 25 years. I was pretty proud halfway through my career to deploy back in 2003. We ended up staying stateside at then Fort Bragg for about 15 months. So that was a big milestone in my career. Another big milestone that's brought me through my career was becoming a first sergeant in the same kind of company that I came in with. I think it's pretty unique for most soldiers to come up, you know, start in a company and stay in the company. You know, looking back on my career, I maybe wish that that wasn't the case. But at the time, I was pretty proud to become a first sergeant of the unit that I was within for, you know, again, for the better part of 15 years. Again, I think it's kind of unique for that to happen. But I was, you know, I was pretty proud that that happened. I was a first sergeant for about 5.5 years, which is a little longer than normal. I kind of went out kicking and screaming. Looking back on it, I probably wish I would have left a little earlier, but absolutely loved the job. Probably the best thing I've done in my military career was a first sergeant. That led me to become the command sergeant major for the 164th Transportation Battalion. And that was a pretty good milestone for me as well. I was the first traditional guardsman to become the battalion CSM. I was there for 3 years. I led during COVID operations, which was a very unique challenge. I'm sure all the listeners that serve probably know that. We did a ton of domestic operations during COVID operations. And now currently I am the Command Sergeant Major for the 151 Regional Support Group. So basically our brigade makes up of two large battalions and a small military history detachment. So the two battalions are a motor transportation battalion and then an aviation battalion as well. So fast forward 31 years, here I am.
Sounds like a great long career full of a lot of different opportunities. Out of curiosity, what did you love so much about being a first sergeant?
Just it gives you a good balance of being with soldiers, being with officers, being able to navigate all sorts of different careers. So you can spend your time with the lower enlisted soldiers. You can spend your time with the enlisted junior officers, junior leaders, and then you're able to make decisions and shape the organization. So you can really, really make a huge, huge impact at that level because, you know, you're able to reach out and touch the E1 to the E9. You know, so you can. It's just such a great position because you're able to mold and shape the organization the way that you want. And just allows you a super amount of flexibility to mentor and to lead the way that you want the organization to move.
Right. And you said 5.5 years you were first?
5.5 years, yeah, which is very, very not typical. I'm not sure the way that it works in the Air Force. But typically, you know, a first sergeant tour is roughly, you know, 3 years. And I think I kind of escaped a couple years with people just not realizing I was there for so long. And I really didn't want to leave. And I only left because of an opportunity. You know, looking back, maybe I was there a year or so too long, but just loved the job, loved the people. A lot of my sort of leadership and development was made through that unit. So it was really a pivotal moment in my career, those 5.5 years.
Yeah, that sounds great. I mean, I think soldiers deserve a first sergeant who is so passionate about the role like you were. From your 5.5 years of experience as a first sergeant, what do you say makes a good first sergeant? Who would be good in that role?
So I think, you know, the biggest key is being available, right? Mm-hmm. So, and it's tough, you know, as a traditional guardsman to be available because you're trying to balance your civilian career, your civilian life, and your military career. And as a first sergeant, you need to be available, you know, pretty much almost every day, every week. You need to be in contact with your senior leaders, with your full-time staff. But just being available for your soldiers, and something that I preach on now is getting out on the drill shed floor. I don't know if that's what they call it in the Air Force, but in the Army, that's basically the open area in your armory. Getting out there and having conversations with soldiers, because you'd be amazed on what they will tell you after the, hey, how are you? Next right. thing you know, 30 minutes later, you're still talking to that soldier. And it could be just development, you know, military development, or it could be, you know, something that's going on in their life that you may break through. So I think, you know, just being available and make sure that you're setting the standard. So, you know, that first sergeant is the standard bearer. So you can't impress the standards if you're not the standard.
Right.
So I think it starts with that and starts with, you know, good order and discipline. But I really just think being available and being that person out there and talking to soldiers, making sure that they know, and everybody talks about having an open door policy and being available, but you can't just say that, you actually have to live that. And I think that's where their money is made, by just being out and, you know, we call it sort of battlefield circulation, but just being out there talking to soldiers. And again, I say it all the time, but you'd be amazed what people will tell you after you say, hey, how are you doing? You know?
Right. So after your 31 years of enlisted experience in the Army National Guard, how have you seen this idea of enlisted force development change over the years, and where do you see it going from here?
So that's an interesting question. So, I mean, it's transitioned from sort of very structured, tough, rigid development when I came through.
Right.
And something that we talk a lot about now is sort of developing through the question of why. Everybody wants to know the why. And for probably the first 15 years of my career, we gave orders and we executed those orders. And that's what we did, right? And it worked. It worked then, because that's sort of how we were raised through that generation. Now, people want to know the answer to the question. And I think that I think there's nothing wrong with that. But I think that some of our senior leadership has struggled with that, because sort of they came up through the mantra of, you know, just do what I tell you to do, right? And they're not used, when someone asks you why, they sort of look at it as they're questioning you. I don't think they're questioning you. They just want to know the reasons behind the orders that you're giving them, right? So right. I think that they're, you know, just sort of listening to what people their needs are. Again, you know, pre 15, 20 years ago, we just sort of executed on what we were told. We never really took into consideration those that were actually acting on the mission or acting on the orders. Or I think, you know, as we move forward and transition to the force that's in front of us, I think it's more important to make sure that we take into consideration on what's important to them, and we assist them through that development.
Right. In my 3 years of experience, there's been a lot of focus on knowing your purpose in the mission, and that's been a big push for our junior enlisted especially, is to know why you're here and then to empower those junior enlisted and to know their purpose, which kind of sounds like what you're talking about, knowing your why, knowing why you're doing what you're doing and why it's important.
Yeah, so something I used to always say back, you know, looking back as a first sergeant, is I never wanted to see a soldier sitting up against a wall, because they want to feel like their time is valued. So
right.
sort of what you're alluding to, your purpose and your value, right? So we bring soldiers in for a drill weekend, or airmen come in for their drill weekend, and that time needs to feel like it's valued, right? So we need to make sure we're filling that space and we're training them properly, so they understand that their purpose, and they're not just coming in and sort of checking some boxes and, you know, 10 hours of that day they're sitting up against their wall and on their cell phone. Because that's not, you know, generally speaking, I don't think that's what soldiers and airmen want to do, right? They want to they want to feel like their training is valued. They want to feel like they have a purpose and a mission. So we really need to make sure that we're executing on a training and they understand what, you know, the why on what they're doing. And I think if we can get to that point, I think you'll have a high-performing unit, you know?
Right. And going off of that, what advice do you have for a junior enlisted member who is looking to progress in their career and also take ownership of that career progression?
Yeah, so the progression leads me back to what I had said earlier about being in a unit for so long. While I think it benefited me and my career journey, I'm not sure that it was able to sort of, you know, broaden my view. So I you know, I think the first thing I usually tell junior soldiers is get out of your comfort zone. And I think, you know, I was listening to Sergeant Major Campbell's podcast when he was on here. Mm-hmm. And he sort of talked about doing things that make you feel uncomfortable. And I think that's super important, because that's when you sort of learn the most about yourself and you sort of branch out. So often in life in general, it's easy to do things that are comfortable because, you know, it just, you're relaxed that way. But as a junior soldier, looking back on my own career, I wish I would have sort of branched out. Even if it's, you know, another unit that does the same thing that you're doing, try to get to that out of the unit, because there's different leadership and they look at things different. While we all, the end goal and the end result is always the same, everybody sort of slices that cake sort of a little bit differently. So if you can branch yourself out, whether it's just in a different unit that maybe does the same thing that you're doing, or sort of change your MOS, just getting a broader scope will help you develop and through your careers. Because as you get, you know, into senior leader positions, you need to have some knowledge of everything, not just your one small job. So I think that's important to sort of branch out. And again, don't be afraid to get outside of your comfort zone. You know, my career, I feel like, was pretty successful. But looking back, that's definitely something. And it wasn't something that I shied away from. I just really never had the opportunity to do it.
Right.
But I think if I was going to turn back the clock, I think I would try to branch out and do some different things.
Right. What's the best way for soldiers and airmen to find those opportunities to branch out or to find different MOSs? Should they talk to their leadership, or are there different pathways that they can take?
Yeah, so I think it's important as a junior soldier to make sure people know what you want to do. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times we just assume that our squad leader, our section sergeant knows the career path that we want to take, right? Kind of off the subject, but on the subject, we talk about evaluations. And, you know, in the Army Guard, we have an NCOER, so it's just a yearly evaluation.
Right.
So within that evaluation, there's checkpoints where you need to make, and then there's future advancement that you want to do. And I bring that up because we talk about it a lot. And like if I'm a squad leader, and my next job wants to be a platoon sergeant, or I'm a platoon sergeant and I want to be a first sergeant, and your current first sergeant doesn't know that you want to do that, he may not mentor you in a way to help you get to that point. So I think to answer your question, the first thing that's super important is whoever sort of, you know, your mentor, or whoever is sort of in charge of you at that time, make sure they know where you want to go in your career. Because at that point, they can help you sort of, you know, they can educate you on opportunities. They can point you in the right direction. They can maybe offer you a secondary skill set. So it's super important to make sure everybody knows what your end goal is. Because while you may think that people know what you want to do, often they don't. So if you have sort of aspirations on different things, you just got to get that out there. Because there's so many opportunities for soldiers and airmen that they just don't know about it. Because their leader may not know that they have that interest, you know.
Right, and I think that's great advice for junior enlisted members to voice what they want to do and advocate for themselves and to make sure that's known. Do you have advice for supervisors for the questions they should be asking those that they're supervising or junior enlisted members?
Yeah, so, you know, for me, it's not overcomplicated, and it goes back to getting out on the floor and talking to your soldiers.
Right.
You know, again, to go back to 15, 20 years ago, if I saw a senior leader, a SAR major, I would turn and walk the other direction,
right,
as fast as I possibly could. And I don't know that's the case anymore, that's the way it should be. We should be open. We should be transparent. We shouldn't want to run the other direction when we see a senior leader, whether it's a chief master sergeant or a command sergeant major or a captain or a major, whatever it may be. We should engage in those type of conversations. So, you know, What I would say to a supervisor is you need to get out there and you need to know your people. If you know your people, then you'll know you should know what they want to do. And the only way you're going to do that is by having open conversations. So often a senior leader or a supervisor or a section sergeant gets sort of caught up in everything that they have to do. You have to sort of prioritize those things. But at the end of the day, you got to have conversations with your airmen and your soldiers, because once you do that, you'll quickly understand what they want. So if you're not out there, you're not on the floor, you're not in the drill shed, you're not in the field, wherever you may be, if you're not out there with them doing what they're doing and having those conversations, you're not going to find that information out. So, you know, again, not to overcomplicate it, you have to build relationships with your soldiers and your airmen. And once you start doing that, you'll quickly figure out what they need.
Right. And you spoke about speaking to your mentor. What advice do you have for finding a good mentor, and what quality should you look for in one?
Yeah, so mentors can be good and bad, right? And I had a feeling that this question was going to come up, and I was trying to think about good mentors for me. And I think I've leaned more on, and not negative mentorship, but things, and I'm sure this is something that everybody says, but I try to do the things in a positive way that I didn't like as I came through. So finding a good mentor for me, advice would be find someone that sets the standard, right? So we all know what the standard is. Find someone that's professional, that lives the values. And you can sort of see that in the way that people handle themselves, right? So look for good qualities. And again, for me, it always goes back to the Army values for me and just being professional and setting the standard. So you come across those type of people, those are the people that even for me, that I look for mentorship and guidance. Just find that professional soldier or airman that sort of sets the standard. And it doesn't necessarily have to be someone within your wing or your formation. Could be out of that, and it could be at any rank and any level. Don't be afraid to strike up a conversation. But again, for me, it just comes back to looking for that person that sets the standards and lives the values that we all should be living.
Right. And you kind of spoke about this, but I'd like to know, what's the best way to approach a senior leader who you'd like to be your mentor?
Yeah, so that could be challenging, right? Because often it could be three or four ranks or levels away from you are. So I think the easiest non sort of scary way, I guess, to say is to sort of run that up through your chain of command. And again, I don't want to keep going back to it, but if you're that senior leader and you're out on the floor and you're out in the Army, those things are going to happen naturally. But right. If that doesn't happen and you're someone that's seeking mentorship from someone that's not easily able to reach out to, I think the easiest path is again, to, communication is key, right? So making your current and your individual leadership understand that you're seeking that mentorship, right? So instead of just going to that person yourself, because it may not, that might not be the easiest path. It may not be, the professional manner. Making sure the people that are in front of you, that are in charge of you, understand that you're looking to speak to someone that way. Everybody has an open door policy, right? So, hey, I would like to, to speak to Sergeant Major Peralt. Is there any way you can set up a meeting? I do that now with our State Command Sergeant Major. There's often, I'm a traditional guardsman, so I don't do this every day. But I still deal, mentor, and lead soldiers that are AGR, that are full-time soldiers, and they're looking for full-time advice. And while I'm sure I can help them, I may not be the right person to do that for them, because that's not sort of my role. Right. So I'll often give them sort of, hey, like maybe you should talk to Command Sergeant Major Campbell, and I'll set those things up. So I think it just goes back to sort of having that conversation and building trust through your immediate supervisors and leaders, and they can assist you in that process.
Right. And you also talked about this, learning from good and bad leaders, right? You take bad experiences and you learn from them as well. Can you tell us a story or maybe an example of a good mentor that you did have and the qualities that they had and maybe how they helped you throughout your career?
Yeah, so I think a good mentor that I had, I've been in for 31 years, and I think at right about the 17-year mark, I said that I was getting out at 20 years. Mm-hmm. I have people that say to me now, I said, I thought you were getting out at 20, and then I thought you were getting out at 25, and now when I have friends that ask me, hey, like, are you ever going to get out of the military? If my wife's around, she just says, don't ask the question. Like, it's right. At this point, it's pointless. So the reason why I say all of that, because I was at that point right around the 23-ish year mark, and my battalion commander at the time, for whatever reason, saw some good in me, and he sort of he heard that I was at that point where I thought I was going to get out. And every time he saw me, he made a point to say, "Hey, you need to stay in. You still bring a lot of value to the organization." So while he never needed to do that, I was a first sergeant at the time. It wasn't really his responsibility to do that, but it seemed like he sought me out every time he saw me, and he made sure that he knew that he thought that I was a value add to the organization, and I should stay in. So, you know, I look back to him specifically just because it felt like he took the time and he cared, right? So I think, you know, as a mentor, that's a key sort of quality, is that you're showing some compassion and you're showing some care in that person that you're mentoring. So he's definitely someone that, looking back, he probably got me through 7-8 more years, and who knows how many more years I got.
So now I want to talk about different challenges that some soldiers and airmen and all enlisted personnel face. Have you ever faced a career step back or made a mistake? And how did you navigate that and learn from it?
Yeah, I don't know how much time we have, but we've made plenty. I've had a few setbacks plenty of mistakes. We make them every day, and I think that's the best way that we learn. But thinking about a career setback, so my first sort of go around on trying to become a first sergeant, part of the process on going through, it's basically a board process, and you have to submit, you know, a bunch of documents. And there was a couple documents that were missing from my packet, and they weren't any fault of my own. So like a couple weeks before the board was supposed to happen, my packet was pulled because of the there was some paperwork that was missing, and I was pretty upset at the time because it was no fault of my own. But at the time, my command sergeant major at the time just didn't think it was a good look for me. He thought that I would have an opportunity moving forward, and it was a pretty big setback because I thought that I was ready at the time. But it was part of the process, right? So. Wasn't a huge deal, but I use that moment often to sort of mentor future first sergeants because it's not always perfect the first time, and I think that's okay. So as long as you learn from those experiences, so you learn from it and then you teach and you mentor people from those experiences, which, again, I use that sort of wasn't a big deal. The next go around, when I had my opportunity, I went for it and I got the job. And looking back on it now, I think it was probably best for me. But I use that moment in time to mentor current first sergeants. I have some that are going through some issues now where they've had some setbacks when they're trying to be a first sergeant. So that was probably one of the bigger ones, bigger setback in my career. And I think for me, the best thing that I can do is use that moment in time to help others, and to realize that it's not the end of the world, right? There's always going to be another opportunity as long as you sort of stick it out. I call senior leadership like sort of like a game of Survivor. Sometimes you have to outlast your competition, and it's not because you don't deserve it and you're not good, but it does sometimes have to be a game of Survivor. So I tell, you know, people all the time when they come across a setback, just stick it out. If it's meant to be, it'll definitely happen. And you can't let one moment in your career define your career, right? And then sort of mistakes. So that's a tougher one. But, you know, I guess what I would really say about mistakes, as long as you learn from them, I think that's the most important piece. And it could be very small on, you know, making a decision. It's tough as a senior leader, especially, you know, in a deployment situation. You're forced to make a decision quick. And sometimes you don't always have a lot of time to think about it, right? So right. Part of your job is to making that decision. And sometimes you got to make it quickly. So, again, I can't really think of anything on the top of my head, but to really think about the question, I think the most important thing about making mistakes is learning from those mistakes and using that moment in time to make yourself better.
And during these difficult times that you might have, such as the couple that you mentioned, how do you maintain motivation and continue growing and come to work with a positive attitude when you're going through difficult times?
Yeah, so just being professional has always been sort of something that I've always tried to sort of lean on. And as a senior leader, like you have to be that example, right? So while we all go through stressful situations, you have to try not to sort of show those moments. You have plenty of times to sort of, you know, talk about that and discuss something that's stressful. But what I think is important is always, you know, again, I talk about being the standard all the time, but, you know, being the standard in front of your formation and being professional. But it's tough, right? So we all go through stressful moments. But if you can just break down that situation and just figure out what's most important in that moment, I think it will allow you to get through that stressful that moment in time. But, you know, it can be difficult to sort of work through and navigate those moments. But, you know, I think the other sort of important piece, too, is to lean on your subordinates and your peers, your partners at that time, to make sure that they're helping you navigate those situations. But no situation is the same. No situation is perfect. But, you know, again, trying to be the standard and being as professional as possible has always been important to me.
So you mentioned your wife, and then I know that you have a few college-age students.
Yeah.
How do you manage kind of this idea of work-life balance, managing your military career, especially in the Guard, and then also taking care of your family as well?
Yeah, so I think work-life balance is one of those buzzwords that we've started using like 10 years ago. Again, to go back to, I think I've mentioned it a few times, but, you know, 15, 20 years ago, there was no such thing. I tell this, you know, not to tell a long story, but I tell a story about when I was at E5, we had this huge snowstorm. It's probably, you know, a good foot and a half of snow, and I think I was 20 minutes late for formation, and I got a lot of grief for it, and I was like, look outside, like there's a major blizzard,
right.
And it was basically like, hey, like, you know what time you're supposed to be here, you should have been prepared to get here on time. And, you know, thinking about, I wish there was some work-life balance 15, 20 years ago, because it would have made those situations a little easier. But, you know, to go to being a first sergeant, that's really when that work-life balance starts to get difficult, because you're often needed, you know, I wouldn't say daily, but weekly. You know, you're checking emails, you're sending messages, and it just gets harder and harder as you sort of navigate your career. Currently now, I would say I have something going on, you know, nearly probably every day, whether it's a few emails here and there, or a couple of phone call conversations. So trying to balance, you know, my civilian career and my military career, and then my family career. My family career now is, my family life is now a little bit easier because I have a 19 and a 20-year-old in college. So it was difficult coming up, and now it's super easy because it's just me and my wife,
right.
And we have a dog at home. So the life balance has flipped, which is very unique. If you stick in long enough, you have kids at a young age, those kids grow up, and now you're more worried about your wife. My wife gives me more grief when I leave for drill now because she's home alone, where,
right.
You know, 5-10 years ago, it was, you know, how are you going to make that soccer game or a basketball game? So how are you going to balance those things with your civilian career, your work, your military career, and then your life balance? So what I think is an important trait in a leader nowadays is to make sure that you understand and you recognize those things, and you give people time to do that stuff. So again, to go back, we never really, I don't want to say we didn't care, but we didn't think about what soldiers had going on during drill weekend, because it's only one week in a month, right? But
right.
There could be something that's super important that's going on that weekend. And I say all the time, we don't win wars on drill weekend. And what I mean by that is, if there's something that's going on in someone's life and it's important to them, then let them leave and go do that, right? Whether it's, you know, going to a soccer game or going to a dance recital or a basketball game or whatever it may be. If you have to give them the day off, give them the day off. If you have to give them 4 hours, give them 4 hours. Because again, we didn't have that mentality when I was coming up. Drill weekend was drill weekend. It didn't matter what you had going on. So, you know, for me, that's sort of where the work-life balance starts. As a leader, you need to recognize those things and again understand, you know, we're not winning any war on a drill weekend. So if it's important to them, then it should be important to you. But I think to go back to your question, I think it's what's important and what you need to understand when you take on roles that involve you being available, not during just drill weekend. You need to understand that from the beginning. And I talk about that a lot with our first sergeants, because it could be overwhelming when you sort of take on that responsibility and you realize I'm not just a sort of a weekend warrior anymore, right? They need me during the week.
Right.
They need me. It could be at night. It could be, you know, at all hours of night. So I think that's sort of where it starts, and understanding that you're willing to do that, right? And I think you have to have, your family has to be willing to support that as well, right? It's because they're the ones that sometimes have to suffer when you have to be pulled away for, you know, a meeting at night that they're not used to you going to, or, you know, a surprise drill weekend, something may have come up. There's a snowstorm, there's a hurricane. Hey, now I've drilled 3 weekends in a row because things have popped up. So I think that's important too. Like, your family has to be willing to support you. So, and that's a conversation that you have to have with them as your career progresses as well. You know, they need to understand that you're no longer just going to be away for drill weekends. You may be needed during the week, at night. So it's super tough to balance all those things. And also, your civilian career, you have to have support from them as well. They have to understand that your military career is super important to you. So luckily for me, I've been working at the same company, Comcast, for 24 years now, and they've always been super supportive. So if you can find a civilian employer that's supportive of your military career, that makes that work-life balance a little harder. So it's not a one-size-fits-all for everybody. It sort of means something different for everybody, but I think you just have to gauge on what's important in that moment, right? And as a senior leader, you do have to understand that while it may not seem big to you, if it's big to them, then it should be big to you.
And I appreciate that. I know that many have not had that experience, and even myself, and with getting that time off, or even being a little nervous to ask for that time off when your family needs you, or there's a dance recital or a soccer game, something that's important to you and your family. I mean, they serve too, and you need their support as well. So when you have that time in that room to give that to your soldiers, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's super, super important. And looking back on it now, I feel like I was pretty lucky. I always had people that were that sort of understood that. I mean, maybe when I was a junior leader, but, you know, as a squad leader and up, I always had good leaders around me that understood that. But I see it even to this day, requests will get denied because it's drill weekend. And again, it doesn't matter, you know, what it is, if it's important. You know, there has to be a balance there as well. Like, if there's something that's going on during that drill weekend that's important to the training, again, you have to sort of balance that out. But, you know, again, I go back to what I said. I think if it's important to them, then it should be important to us, you know.
Right. And I uniquely have that reverse perspective, as I grew up as a military kid. Both my parents were in the Guard. They have been for over 30 years, so my whole life, and I have two sisters. So it's interesting to hear your perspective and then also grow up learning to support them in the military, learning to adjust when they're away. And then they both deployed as well. Were you deployed when you had children, or?
Yeah, so my son was born in 2003. I was in Fort Bragg at the time, so luckily it was a sort of a stateside deployment. We were down there for 15 months, so I was able to come home for that. Right. And then my last deployment was in Kuwait and Iraq, and that was in 2010. So you got me on the spot here, not super good on math, but they're 19 and 21. So,
right.
We'll let everybody else figure that out. So they were pretty young at the time. So that, you know, that's a challenge in itself. But thankfully for me, like, I look back on that moment, and I was 33-ish, I guess. So that was, I had already sort of, you know, I don't want to say I figured out life, because I still haven't figured out, but I had navigated life at that point. So that moment for me was a little bit easier because I was a little older. But those are tougher for the people that you're leaving behind versus the person that leaves. Both of my kids, 21 and 19 year old, have grown up in the military. That's all they know.
And it's important, like you said, to have that family support, and then also the support of your employer, and then the military as well, so that you can balance all three.
Yeah, and that comes to communication too, especially with your civilian employer. You have to keep them, you know, engaged. They have to understand, you know, sort of what you do, what's important to you, what's important to the organization. And there's a ton of ways that you can recognize your civilian employer as well. And I don't think people take those opportunities enough, because I think that means a lot to the civilian employer. Like, you know, again, my job has always been very, very supportive of my military career, but they've also been recognized with a bunch of different civilian awards through the military. So I think that there's probably a lot of soldiers and airmen that don't realize that they can nominate their employer for an award, but that's important to them too. So I think, but it, you know, goes back to that communication piece. You have to make sure that they understand, you know, when you have drill, you know, if you're someone that does work during snowstorms or hurricanes. You know, the organization that I came up through, we were always busy during a snowstorm or a hurricane, or, you know, domestic operations is obviously very big for the Guard. So they need to understand when those moments happen that you may be called. So if they're aware of that and you pick up the phone on a Friday and it's not a typical Drew weekend, it's like, hey, there's a hurricane and we just got called in. While they may be shocked, they wouldn't be totally surprised because you've already sort of communicated that, that may happen. So I think that that's key to a good civilian employer relationship. It just makes sure that you're communicating with them and they know everything that's going on. For me, my civilian employer, I give them my yearly schedule. As soon as I get it, they get it. And if anything pops up, even if I don't think it's going to, even if it's not happening, if I think it's going to happen, I'll give them a heads up. Hey, I see such and such is going on. There's a chance I make it activated, or there's a chance I make it called in, just so you have an understanding of what's going on. So I think that's, it's super important. And that's the same thing with your family. You make sure that you're communicating those things with them as well.
And when it comes to managing your civilian career, your family, your military career, especially for one, like when you were first sergeant, when you had to be available for most of the week, how do you manage stress and burnout, and how do you make sure that you're taking care of yourself at that time so that you can complete the mission the best that you can?
Yeah, so I'm not I'm not a very stressful person. So I guess that's one of, somehow I gained that quality from someone in my life. So the burnout piece can be tough, though. So while I don't typically get stressed out very much, I try to prioritize the thing that's in front of me and not worry about 7 or 8 other tasks. So if I'm worrying about one thing, that's what I try not to worry about. I know there's a lot of people that will have, 6 or 7 things on the burner and they're worrying about all 6 or 7. For me, I try to take the one thing in the moment that's the most important thing, mm-hmm. and then push everything else to the side and worry about those when I can. And that's how sort of I'm able to deal with stress. So I try not to get stressed out. Again, it just happens to be one of the qualities that I've able to maintain. But the burnout piece can be tough. And I think, for the burnout, you just need to do the best you can in recognizing that it's in front of you, and understanding that it's okay to take time away, right? So it goes back to, if it's important for you to step away from the organization, then step away from the organization, right? If you need to suit a day, you need to take a day off, whatever it may be, you need to make sure you recognize that. And the tough thing about a senior leader is you feel like you have to be everywhere all the time. Right. And that's tough because there's always competing priorities, right? And you can't be everywhere all the time. And I think if you do a good enough job and the organization understands your value, then they know that you can't be everywhere every time. So that's something, I guess, that I do stress out about, is sometimes I wish I could sort of cut myself in half and go different directions. Right. But you can't, but you have to sort of prioritize that. And I think that sort of lends into the burnout factor. Just understand that you can't do everything. You can't be everywhere. So to protect yourself from burning out, try to figure out what's the most important thing, especially if you're looking at a specific drill weekend. Where is my priority for that weekend? Where's the most important thing for me to be? And try to realize that you just can't be everywhere all the time and you can't do everything. And you also need to lean on everybody else around you. Everybody's surrounded by great leaders. So if there's somewhere that you feel like you need to be, but you need to be somewhere else, sort of to protect from that burnout, task that something else to somebody else that's empower someone to do something for you, right? So yeah, just understanding that you can only do so much, that sort of helps you protected from being burnt out.
And then prioritize and delegate as well. It sounds like some of the things that you've been doing.
Yeah, delegation is key, right? It's a key for mentorship, because if you're delegating a task in the same moment, you're empowering someone.
Right.
So when you empower your subordinates, typically they'll shine through that empowerment. So you need to lean on the people that are around you. There's always a ton of good people around you. So you can't be everywhere. So let them do some of that work for you.
So do you have any recommendations for resources or books or even movies, articles, anything like that, that has helped you grow in your personal and professional career?
So I'm not a big book reader. Unfortunately, it bores me. So not really. I mean, I guess I'll give you guys a plug. And I started listening to the Chevrons podcast up to a couple weeks ago. So I think it's now going to help me in my career. So I'm going to branch out and try to listen to some more leadership podcasts. I think it's just from the 5 or 6 from this podcast that I listen. I've learned a lot of insight from different leaders, junior leaders, senior leaders. So I think that's going to help me move forward. try to gain some experience, some knowledge just through podcasts. And I do, I've tried to read it again. It's just a little boring for me.
Right.
But I think I've gained a lot of knowledge through conversation, through leaders around me. So while I may not be educating myself in a manner through a book or through a podcast or something like that, I think I take a lot through conversation. So I feel like I learn something every time I have a conversation with someone. So I have a lot of conversation with other senior leaders. And every time I have a conversation with someone, I feel like I grab something that they're doing. Inadvertently, it always comes up in a conversation. They say something, you're like, oh, I wish I thought of it that way. So I feel like I take a lot from conversations, either with superiors or subordinates or sort of anybody. I try to gain a little bit something that way.
Right. And I'm sure many people can relate that reading isn't for them.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that's big.
Yeah. But in one of them, the podcast that I was listening to, the gentleman was talking about audiobooks. My wife is a big audiobook person. So instead of listening to the radio for, 35 minutes or whatever it may be in your travel, that might be something that I think about is doing the audiobook method instead of just burning my time. And while I'm commuting, I can be listening and learning that way.
What advice would you give to yourself when you were a junior enlisted member?
Yeah, so I we talked about it earlier, but just sort of branching out and not being afraid to do different things. Taking risk, I think, is a big one as well. I know I mentioned it a couple times, but I came up basically through the same organization, and I feel like I've been pretty successful. But if I was to do it all over again, I think I would branch out, and I probably would grab another skill set along the way. So, I'm a motor transport operator and a fuel supply specialist. Sort of those were my skill sets coming up. But I think I would have grabbed one more, something sort of out of left field that I would never think that I would be able to do or want to do. It would help me with my growth. But again, just to try to do different things. Don't be afraid to get out of your comfort zone. Don't be afraid to fail either. It's I think you learn a lot from failure. Like I think we had talked about a little bit about that earlier, but it's okay to fail. It's okay to make a mistake, right? As long as you understand that you did something wrong and you grow from that, as long as we're learning from our mistakes. So, really just, looking back, I think I would have wanted to branch out just a bit more, because I think it would have broadened my horizons and maybe educated myself a little bit more. But that being said too, I'm pretty happy of where my career brought me.
So last question, something that we ask all of our guests, what is the best piece of advice you've ever given or received?
So the best piece of advice I'd ever given, and it's not really advice, but this is what I would tell anybody who's looking to come up through leadership, and it's a little bit of a sort of a buzzword or a catchphrase. But as a leader, what I've always tried to do is get people to the point where they'd run through a wall for me. Right. So not literally. Right? I don't want anybody to run through a wall, or in the same breath, get people to the point where they feel bad when they make a mistake, almost like your kids. Right. So when you have children and they make a mistake, then they feel bad that they disappointed you. Right. So it's kind of weird to say that, but the same thing for a soldier and airman. Get them to the point where if they did something wrong, they sort of feel bad that they let you down. Like I sort of have the relationship with the team at work, my civilian job. So if you can get them to that point, through building culture, being a good mentor, being a good leader, I think you'll have a successful organization. So again, what I really mean by getting them to run through a wall is getting to them to the point where they'll do anything that you ask them to do, because they trust that what you're asking them to do it all has good intentions, and the end result, you'll be winning, right? So if you can get them, someone to that point, I think for me, I've always felt successful. And I've never asked any of my soldiers if they'd run through a wall for me, but I'd be willing to bet that many of the people that I've served with that they would do that. So if you can get them to that point, again, it just comes from setting the standard, being professional. And then one last thing, for me, what's always been super important in my career is watching other people grow. So we've talked a lot about the 5.5 years that I spent as a first sergeant. And if I look back on that time, I've probably had 10 to 12 soldiers and officers move on in advance from that group of people that I served with for 5.5 years. At least 5 or 6 platoon sergeants that I had at the time have now become first sergeants. So that's that makes you super proud. And then even in the officer side, I've had platoon leaders that have gone on to become company commanders. So, you know, if that's your main focus, and that's always been my focus to see other people succeed, I think that's super important, you know, as a senior leader, to make sure that the people that in your organization are growing in your organization as well. And I think that's a good mark. We talk about, in football, they talk about the coaching tree. So, you know, not something that I say to people very often, but I'm proud of my coaching tree. There's a lot of people that I've served with that have moved on and that have gone to and done great things. So it makes me proud to say that I serve with them. So those are the two things. Empower your leaders, encourage them to be leaders. And again, if you can lead through a way where a soldier will run through a wall, I think you'd be successful.
And that piece of advice just shows the kind of leader that you are in your skill, that soldiers are willing to run through a wall for you. One of the best pieces of advice that I've ever received was the best leaders are those who people want to follow, which is kind of what you're saying, is become a leader that they respect, that they don't want to disappoint, and that they trust. That's a great way to close this episode, unless you have any other final words or thoughts of wisdom that you want to share with our listeners.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the time. It was a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you so much.
Great.